Several years ago, my spouse and I decided to do something we'd never done before. We decided that we were going to be the ones to host the big family Thanksgiving get-together. I was young and stupid. And so we took this on, and this wasn't just going to be the regular family Thanksgiving. No, this was going to be bigger and better than anything that had ever been done before. I was determined. And, you know, I've decided that when you're inviting people to a big dinner, like a Thanksgiving dinner, it's kind of like being in debt. At a certain point when you're in debt, you know, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 in debt, you're like, I might as well go ahead and take that trip to the Bahamas. I mean, what's a few more thousand, right? So that's what happened. The family was invited. And it was like, I might as well just invite everybody we know. And pretty soon, instead of cooking for 8 or 9 people, we were cooking for 38 people. And it turned out it was hard, really hard. So on Thanksgiving Day, there we were. We'd set up this long, long table. We had no paper plates here. This was a spectacle of abundance. And we had my great-grandmother's china laid out, and we had the silver polished and the crystal on the table. And I started to get a little worried as I looked at the refrigerator, which was just bulging with food that we were supposed to cook. But my mother-in-law had promised to help us out. She was going to drive down early and help us out that day. So then she arrived, and it turned out that she came not with the energy to cook, but with a fever. So she had her long coat on, and she sat down on the sofa in that coat, and she didn't move the entire day from there. Every now and then, she'd wake up from her nap and yell at us that we needed to put the potatoes on or knead the dough a little more or whatever it was. So this was all done in anticipation of my parents who were coming into town. And so their plane was, of course, late, and everything was in chaos. But somehow they arrived just in time, and somehow this meal came together. Now, it wasn't perfect. I will admit the gravy was lumpy. The pecan pie never set in the center, so it was soupy. And I discovered that sourdough bread does not work in making our family's stuffing recipe. It was terrible, but overall, it was fine. It was loud. It was chaotic. The cleanup was monumental, and it was exhausting. And my dreams of this being an annual tradition were pretty much gone by the time the day was over, eclipsed by this reality. My idea of a perfect Thanksgiving dinner was tempered by this reality that was messy and flawed, but it was okay. It was different than the one I had anticipated and worked for, but it was okay. So fast forward to last Thanksgiving. My spouse and I traveled to visit my parents in Texas. This time the holiday was a somber one. My father was in late stage leukemia. And I can't remember even what we ate, but I know it was takeout. This time it was definitely on paper plates. And what I do remember is the stillness of the moment, the fragility of the time. No bustling conversations or overflowing dishes. But again, even though it was not the ideal of what I would have it, I was grateful for it. Not for the circumstances themselves, of course, but for the intimacy, the opportunity to be together in that way. That Thanksgiving was tinged with melancholy, but it was meaningful. Meaningful in a way that the bountiful image of Thanksgiving of my youth couldn't have comprehended. And my father was gone that following January, so this will be the first Thanksgiving without him. Now, I know that many of you have experienced holidays like these, Thanksgivings and other holidays, ones that contrast sharply with each other, that reflect the highs and lows of life's journey. Holidays where reality contrasts with the image we had of what they should be. And this leads me to ask, what does it mean to be truly and deeply grateful, especially when life is complicated? How do we hold on to gratitude in moments of joy, but also sorrow or even injustice? So as we prepare for Thanksgiving this week, many of us are wrestling with the complexity of its history, as we heard about in the reading that Beth did earlier for Time for All Ages. Growing up, we were told that familiar story of the pilgrims on the Wampanoag sharing a meal, a tale of harmony and cooperation. But as we've grown, we've learned the deeper truths, how Indigenous people were driven from their lands, massacred, and marginalized to build the America we know today. In speaking about his book, This Land Is Their Land, David Silverman says, "Wampanoag adults have memories of being a kid during Thanksgiving season, sitting in school, feeling invisible, and having to wade through the nonsense that teachers were shoveling their way. They felt like their people's history, as they understood it, was being misrepresented. They felt that not only their classes, but society in general was making light of historical trauma, which weighs around their neck like a millstone." Now, many of us remember being in school, perhaps coloring pictures of pilgrims and their first Thanksgiving, sitting around at the table with their new Indian friends. Many of us never questioned that story's reality, and so it can be hard sometimes to reconcile what we know now with what we thought then. Wampanoag clan mother Anita Peters told NPR that her people were farmers. They were fishermen. They were hunters. They had a sophisticated form of government. So it was a much more sophisticated lifestyle of the Indigenous people than Puritans would have given us credit for. So we know now that the Indigenous people suffered from this story that was rewritten from the colonizer's point of view, leaving out the humanity of these very real people in favor of a superficial story. That asks the question, does it mean that there's nothing in Thanksgiving for us today? And that's an important question, especially for all of us as Unitarian Universalists, knowing that our religious forebears were these pilgrims. Now, did everybody know that, right? That sometimes that line is hard to trace, right? But it's true. These pilgrims settled in New England. They built a web of Congregationalist churches. Reverend Dr. Ken Brown knows as well. And many of those Congregationalist churches eventually became Unitarian churches in the 1800s. So this holiday is ours in a very particular way to reckon with. Isabel Call says, "I started writing and saying thanks grieving instead of Thanksgiving, because in popular culture we've come to see Thanksgiving as a commemoration of a friendly feast shared by Native Americans and European settlers. But this is like Turkey Creativity Day, a really nice idea that covers up theft and treachery." Now, I know some may wonder if revisiting these truths ruin this holiday. It's actually true of a lot of holidays, right, when we really look at their origins and history. Should we set aside myth and embrace reality? Well, you know my answer is yes. I think it's vital that we don't turn away from the truth. I actually think that far from ruining the holiday, it gives it depth. I think it helps us to better understand the world that we're living in right now. the fears and divisions that we see today, what scares people, what ideas people hold about race, what they think about people who are supposedly different or people who don't supposedly belong here. All these ideas, which are very much right now, are also rooted in this historical past of our nation. This past is not ancient history. Its ripples shape the present. It informs the way people vote in important elections. The kind of tension seen between the mythical Thanksgiving story and the real Thanksgiving story is lived out in our nation today, and we feel that in our bones. I really think many of us are grappling at this moment, really, with the grief that comes from seeing the United States in a different way in recent years, in the last month, than what we might have thought it was. I think people here are smart. We've always known that things aren't perfect. But I think most of us thought there were some markers of decency we could count on, a baseline of sorts. The sanctity of democracy, the ability for people to accept reason, to a point anyway, the fundamental goodness of humanity. We always hope that the pendulum always swings back toward goodness, right? Even with the capacity we all have for evil. But all those things that I know I've thought of as something of certainties for myself, those have come into question in recent times. And I have a feeling that's true for many of you. I don't quite know what the story of this nation is today, because the story continues to be written and it has layers. And it makes it hard to know how to approach an already problematic holiday like Thanksgiving at an already problematic time. And I think the answer is that we have to hold multiple stories at once. Like life itself, this story is nuanced, it's complicated, it's layered. But I think parts of it, the spirit of gratitude, the idea of coming together, those parts remain profoundly valuable. You know, the truth is we know that gratitude changes us. Science has shown that practicing gratitude improves our mental and physical health. It strengthens our relationships. It even enhances our resilience. Gratitude, though, is more than just a tool of self-improvement. In our faith tradition, in our spiritual practice, it is deeply connected to the love that is at the center of Unitarian Universalism. So think about it. I mean, we can't really nourish love if we don't have gratitude. There isn't love without gratitude. They go hand in hand, side by side. Gratitude calls us to recognize the beauty in what we have, even when it's imperfect. It invites us to hold a love not just for the easy and the joyful, but for the difficult and complex. Isabel Call reminds us that we celebrate Thanksgiving because gratitude is essential to human life, but grief is essential for healing our history of violence. It's really hard to be thankful and sorrowful at the same time, but this, folks, this is life. Sometimes joy and sorrow are intermixed. You know, as I reflect on those two Thanksgivings I told you about, that big, loud, noisy, messy one from years ago, and that quiet, intimate one of just last year with my father before his death, I wouldn't change either of them. Both shaped me. Both taught me something about life, love, and resilience. So this year, as we sit on the edge of potentially monumental change in our nation, we find ourselves returning to this idea of gratitude amidst complexity. Life brings challenges, there's no doubt. And some of those challenges we are called to actively resist. We don't have to be grateful for those challenges, but I am grateful for the character and community that equip us to face them. And so we can hold gratitude for the Indigenous people whose story is woven into Thanksgiving, not just for their role in the myth, but for their enduring presence and resistance. We can hold gratitude for the hard truths that challenge us to grow. And we can hold gratitude for the love and connection that sustain us through every season of life. The complexity of this story, this Thanksgiving story, reminds us of the larger complexities of which we are a part. And that reminds me of that even larger picture of which we are a part. The vast universe that surrounds us. The awe-inspiring complexity of that universe. The loving presence that we invite in, either through our own conscience or our belief in God, whatever it may be. What happens at the smallest level matters. And at the same time, there is a gigantic, vast universe and timeline of which we are a part. A little piece, but we're a part of it. We are big and small all at once. So in the coming days, as we maybe gather around tables, maybe crowded, maybe sparse, let us embrace the complexity of gratitude. Let us remember that gratitude isn't about erasing the hard parts of life or pretending they don't exist. It's about holding them alongside the good, finding meaning in the messy, in the pie that remains unbaked in the middle, and staying open to the lessons each moment brings. This Thanksgiving, we are going to invite in gratitude. We're going to be like these wonderful jazz musicians and meet the moment as it comes and allow that melody to be flexible and respond to whatever may be happening. We're not looking for perfection, but for the wholeness of life and all its beautiful, challenging complexity. And you, my friends, are all beautiful in your beautiful, challenging complexity. And in that spirit, I have an assignment for you. I want you to take at least two of these cards, okay? One of these cards is for you to keep as an affirmation of who you are and what you bring. And some of these cards are kind of cheesy, I know, but we're going to do this anyway. We're just going to get past our sophistication and just enjoy the messages that come to us. And the other card or cards, your assignment this week is to give them to someone else. It can be someone in this community. It can be someone out in your world, wherever. It can be somebody that you meet at the grocery store that you just feel like could use a little affirmation. But I want you to spread this gratitude out into the world in some way. I wanted to start with you. I want you to know how grateful we are for you and then spread it out in the world. And those of you who are joining us online this morning, if you email me later, I will draw a card for you and a couple of cards, and I'll send you a photo of those cards. So if you're so inclined, just email me this afternoon and I will do that for you. And in that spirit, let us move forward.